White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 388.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we're in that off-season part of the year where we do a wishbone every two or three weeks, maybe. We have other stuff going on. We've just recently done our updated Game of Thrones Season 8 preview, so if you didn't know that John and I do other stuff, you can go check that out. So, how are things going with you right now?
Offseason's going fine. You know, we made it past signing day, a few minor coaching changes, and we're not to spring practice yet. So still kind of enjoying the home stretch of basketball season. You know, one more week to go, and then it's conference tournament time. So, enjoying that. And again, football season is, I love it, but it's long and it's intense and there's a lot going on. So I appreciate when we have a little break.
Yeah, the two things that have been in the news the last couple of days, and certainly what I've seen on Twitter, on a lighter hearted side, the Auburn players and others at the NFL, I guess the combine, they're working out.
Yes.
And that's great. And I saw that Jamel Dean had like the fastest time, which is funny since he was the one that left Ohio State because they said he was physically unable to play football, and yet he's the fastest player in the NFL combine. So that's interesting. And on a more serious note, of course, yesterday we had the terrible tornadoes to hit Lee County, and I was finding out about that in bits and pieces. None of my, you know, I got tons of family down that area in Talladega County, and nobody was saying anything about it, so I guess it missed them. I wasn't saying a whole lot about it on Twitter at first, but as little things have come in, it looks pretty horrific. So what have you seen anything more than that, or was I just in the dark?
Oh, yeah. No, it was terrible. I mean, it was a terrible tragedy. I think the latest death toll was 23 people were killed by the tornado.
Unbelievable.
And for comparison purposes, in 2018, 10 people died in the entire United States in tornado fatality. Yeah. So a really terrible day in the southern end of Lee County, Smith Station, Beauregard, mm-hmm. that part of the world. And a wide swath of devastation. And I feel terrible for those families. There's a lot of families that, you know, had lost a loved one. There's a lot of other people that are injured or their home was destroyed and they have nowhere to go. And so, you know, our hearts go out to those people.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's and I was happy to see some Alabama people saying, you know, Auburn people came up and helped us. Now we got to go help them. And so, although I don't know that Auburn itself was hit as much as, like you said, the other end of the county. Was that the impression you got?
Yeah, but it's still Lee County.
Right. Well, sure. Yeah. So I just am saying I don't know that there was, even though there were people killed, which is just astonishing in this day and age, that many people killed in tornadoes is meant to be pretty horrific. But I don't think the campus got hit or anything. That was my sense. Okay, so, but that's just terrible. Well, we're here to talk about football and Auburn football and what's going on with that. And I guess the main thing that got us motivated this week to get back in the studio was that the SEC is weird, right? The SEC will go years and years without changing things, and then all of a sudden they'll get a bug up their butt and they'll just start willy-nilly changing everything. And what they've decided to do is to finally address the issue of Auburn having to play at Georgia and at Alabama within like 14 days at the end of every other season. And of course, this never used to be a problem because we always had it worked out to where we would play for the longest time, we didn't have a little game in between, you know. When we played an 11-game schedule, we would play Georgia and at Alabama, or we would play at Georgia and then Alabama at home. And by at Alabama or Alabama at home, I meant Legion Field most of those years. But we would have an off week in between them. I mean, it was kind of walk through the whole thing. So we'd have an off week in between them. Well, then when the SEC championship game came along, Auburn and Alabama agreed not to take their off week the week before they played each other, but to take it the week after so they could have a week off for whichever one of them hopefully ended up in Atlanta. And the SEC, the rest of the SEC got all bent out of shape about that. They didn't like Auburn and Alabama having a mutual non-aggression pact like like Germany and Soviet Union and getting a week off that like a Florida or a Georgia or a Tennessee didn't get. And so then they changed it to where you couldn't take a week off the week before the SEC championship game. So instead, we just moved the Georgia game up a week and stuck like Alabama State or somebody like that in that, you know, the least likely team on our schedule to upset us would go in between Georgia and Alabama. So we did that for a while. But in 2012, that's when things really got messed up. So you want to take over the story from there?
Yeah, I think they said you actually can't take a bye week that late in the season is what the SEC did. So no one is allowed to take their bye the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
To get an advantage over their rivals or the prepare for the title game. So in 2012 we had expansion again, right?
Yep.
And you know, we had earlier had the Arkansas South Carolina expansion, and that's when we went to divisions and all that.
Yep.
And to this expansion we added Missouri and Texas A&M. And in order to make it work, they had to mess up Georgia's schedule. So Georgia played at Auburn 2 years in a row, 2012, 2013. And so from then on, in even years, we play both of those teams on the road.
Yeah.
And again, the little mini home game in between. And in odd years, we played both of those teams at home. And it's, again, it's in 2013 and 2017, it worked out. And in other years, it did not. And a part of the problem is that, you know, Georgia and Alabama are two of the top five teams in college football right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not any doubt about it. So we're playing two of the top five teams in college football, you know, pretty much back to back, and then going to play theoretically in the SEC title game. I think we wanted a break from playing those two so close together. And the bigger issue is, I mean, there's two issues. The one is the kind of the competitive balance issue of playing two games of that magnitude so close together. Mm-hmm. And the other one is that the odd year, even year home games schedule and ticket sales.
Right.
So in order to deal with the competitive balance issue, Auburn asked Georgia and the SEC if we could move the game to the first weekend in October, and Georgia is going to switch it in Tennessee so that they will play Tennessee as their end of the year SEC game, and then Georgia Tech, and then we will play, you know, Texas A&M or whoever towards the end, and Georgia kind of the first weekend in October.
Yeah. And this is really a stopgap. You know, I mean, we don't want to play them both at home and away in the same years going forward at all, but we couldn't fix that yet because it's set through like 2022 or something. So for 2020 through 2022, I believe, we're going to do this thing where we play Georgia earlier in the year just to kind of break it up. You know, it's funny to look at how it played out. We've played them at home and away seven times, starting in 12, right? And they swept us the away years, 12, 14, 16, and 18, they swept us. But if you throw out the stupid 15 year where everything went wrong and the everything just – that was, you know, that's one of those 2008 almost type years. Even though we had a winning season, it still was in a lot of ways a kind of a 2008 type year. If you throw that out, we swept them in two of those other three – you know, those are the 2 years, 2013 and 2017. So it's not like – it hasn't worked out for us when we've been at home. Two out of those 3 years we've had the two of them at home, we swept them, even when they were both ranked number one. And one of those years, it took us to the, got us a leg up to the national championship game, the BCS. So it's worked out for us pretty darn well to have them both at home. It's just all those years, it's those other 4 years of getting swept that sucks. And you could also say, as you were alluding to there a minute ago, you can also point to 2017 and say, while, yes, we did beat them both, we did sweep them at home when they were both number one. We also had so many injuries because of playing the two of them back-to-back that when we got to Atlanta, we didn't have any offense left.
Well, and, I mean, I said it at the time, and I believe it now, you played them two times in a row, and the defensive coaches had learned everything we could do. So by the time we played him a third time, there was basically no chance offensively for Auburn in that game in hindsight. So I mean, I think that really matters.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And yet it was still a one score game in the fourth quarter. People always forget. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, not down that rabbit hole, but yeah. So what do you think about the SEC being willing to do this and about Georgia being willing to do it? I mean, Did they look at that as an advantage for them too? Like before they played Georgia Tech, or I mean, I'm just trying to figure out. We know how we felt about it, which is it's not everything we wanted, but it's a decent enough stopgap for now. But how do you think Georgia looked at this, and how did the rest of the SEC look at it?
I mean, it's so stupid. We take this stuff so way too seriously. And again, I'm saying this on a podcast about Auburn football. We take it too seriously. Okay. I think everyone looks at everything and says like a zero win game. Like a, so if you win a dollar, that means I must be losing a dollar.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the idea is, well, if it's benefiting Auburn, it must be bad for somebody else. We need to stop it. so some Georgia people are like, well, if it's good for Auburn, we don't want it ever. Yeah. And you know, there was a time, not that long ago, when we actually, you know, it was a respectful rivalry and we didn't, you know, despise each other or whatever. So it is possible that it's good for both teams. It's good for the SEC as a whole to spread out the huge rivalry games and get a big marquee rivalry kind of in midseason like that. And I think in the long run, it's going to be fine. I do think this is 100%. Because both those teams are so good. If Georgia was stuck in the mediocrity of some of their recent past, I don't think we'd be having this discussion or this issue. I don't.
Yeah.
And I think if Alabama wasn't where they are right now, we wouldn't be having this discussion or this issue. It's tied together. The funny thing is, like, Georgia fans act like we should give them something in return for this.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if it's a zero-sum game and we're gaining and they're losing, then if that's the way they're looking at it, and I'm not saying that that's right, but if that's the way they're looking at it, then, of course, they want something to compensate their quote-unquote loss. So, but
well,
what,
just to compensate their inconvenience, if it's not a loss.
Yeah, a convenience fee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, give them 25 cents then. I don't know. I mean, what do they want? Are they saying what they want? Are they just being coy or what?
No, there's no coy. I mean, it's the kind of thing like, what can you say? What could we possibly do for them? The only thing that we can do is say, when the SEC redoes the schedule, we're willing to play in Athens 2 years in a row.
Well, yeah.
And we are.
That's fair.
So that's perfectly fine. And we're willing to do that down the road when the SEC wants to redo the schedule.
And John, there was a time not too long ago when we would have jumped at the chance to play them in Athens 2 years in a row. Oh my goodness. I mean, we've done this before. All right, let's do it. This is just so fun. Come on. You got to let me do it. 83. Okay. This is Auburn wins in Athens in the modern era. 83, 85, 87, 89, 93, 95, 97, 99. 05, I think that's it. And once we get to 05, though, I'm going to have to stop and not say anything else. But was that the last time we beat them in Athens? Was the Cox to
yes.
Shadu? Wow.
Yes, it was.
Well, there for a while there, we used to say we owned Clark County, right? I mean, it was our property. But, not anymore. But, there was a time there when we would have welcomed – we'd have been like, you know, let's just play in Athens every year. It's fine. We'll make like it's Birmingham, you know. Let's just play it. Georgia would have been like – they wouldn't have known how to take that because it's like, well, on the one hand, yeah, it's our home. Of course we'll play there every year. On the other hand, they always – Auburn always beats us at home. They wouldn't have known what to do with that. So what do you think this – what will be the impact? One thing everybody's talked about is the history, right, the tradition. And, you know, Lord knows you can't do anything at Auburn or in the SEC without people invoking tradition. We couldn't put an orange drop shadow on our numbers in 97 without people getting the vapors, you know. So what will be the impact on tradition by moving the Georgia game for like 3 years to October?
I think it'll be kind of a fun, novel thing at first. It'll be in the middle of the season. It's a rivalry game. So losing it is very tough. And mentally, yeah. It takes some time to recover. And I think one of the things, it's hard for Auburn to recover from losing to Georgia and then go play Alabama. Mm-hmm. So I think in that sense, whoever loses this game will be in better shape. I think you pointed out. I mean, I don't think this game, it's not going to lessen the rivalry. It's not going to, you know, that kind of stuff. You pointed out that they always seem to get their injured players back at the end of the season.
They do, yeah, right before our game. It's amazing how that happens. It's like the laying on of hands, you know, when it comes time to play Auburn.
They're going to have to like triple speed that if they're going to get it by October. So
yeah. They'll still be reviewing the situation before they suspend somebody. In November, probably. But I'm just thinking that these are people that look at there are people out there that look at moving this game to October as,
and that's nothing but pure and simple old fashioned communism.
I look at it and I just say,
come on, man.
So go ahead.
Well, I mean, we like tradition. We love college football. Sure. One of the reasons, because all the great traditions. And Auburn and Georgia have played in November, you know, almost every time they've ever played.
Yep.
So I get it. The idea of playing in a different month is going to be weird. And it will be odd at first.
It will.
But it's still the same game. I think the other interesting dynamic of this is Georgia's going to reverse it and put Tennessee in the schedule. So there are going to be years when they go to Knoxville in November and the weather is terrible.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
So that could be kind of fun and entertaining angle out of this whole thing.
And
but
the other thing I've been pointing out is, and remember, I fought against the idea that LSU is our big rival, but I've about decided I'm losing that battle. I'm losing that war, right? People have decided LSU is our big rival now, and I just have to deal with it. I don't like it, but I'll deal with it. But I've been pointing out, if LSU is such a big honking rival of ours, what week do we traditionally play them on every season? It's a trick question, John. There is no week. We play them everywhere from the third game to the 12th game. I know we've played them as early as third. Somebody said we played them first. We've never played LSU first. There's no time in modern history we played LSU the first week of the season. Maybe back in Shug's time or something.
It's been the first SEC game. I don't think it's
yeah,
been the kickoff.
It has been because it took the spot of Tennessee sometimes, which used to be our traditional first SEC game. But it's been as early as first, and in 2001 we played LSU after we played Alabama. That's a trivia question just waiting to happen there. What was the only time What was the only time Auburn played an SEC West game after the Iron Bowl? And that was 2001. We played LSU.
That was hurricane related.
That was 9/11 related, actually.
9/11. Okay.
Yeah. One of those two type of things. Yeah. It is funny though, because usually LSU rescheduling something is almost always a hurricane. That was just an oddity there. So, and then I guess the last thing or two, we've talked about pod scheduling a little bit before, but how would that be different than what we do now, and why would it be better?
Well, first of all, pod scheduling would be tremendously better for the reasons that you and I dislike the current SEC schedule, like you were lamenting our series with Florida and Missouri. Tennessee.
And so never playing Missouri, but just the one time.
That's right. So the way pod scheduling would work is every SEC team would keep three permanent rivals, okay? Mm-hmm. You would then play five rotating opponents. We would do away with divisions, and you would play five rotating opponents out of the other, 10 teams, basically. So over the course of 4 years, you would play every team home and away in the SEC. Auburn's permanent opponents would be Alabama, Georgia, and most proposals I've seen have it be Mississippi State, but
which,
it could be.
Yeah, which would make sense, yeah.
That's fine. So I think there wouldn't be divisions, so it would be the top two teams would get matched up. If there was a tie, then the tiebreaker would be playoff scheduling, the playoff rankings.
Mm-hmm.
I think this solves this. People couldn't handle it because they're like, how are we doing in our division, or whatever. But it really would allow every, college football player that comes into the SEC will get to play every team and play in every stadium. And I think that has a lot of merit. And I think it evens out the playing field because you don't have this, the West is tougher, all these East teams are dodging the tough teams kind of discussion anymore, because they're playing over the course of years, they're playing the same teams. Some teams, permanent opponents would be harder than others, and it doesn't matter. I'm fine with it. But I think it's a brilliant idea that a number of people put out there. I mean, SB Nation and Bill Conley and other people over there pushed it. Other people have talked about the value of it. I think legitimately would be some people couldn't handle the lack of divisions thing because of tradition or not understanding the standings or whatever. But I think the benefit to be gained by playing everybody in a short period of time would just be amazing. And think of all the great games that we don't get that we would get so much more often.
Absolutely. I just wish they had a better name for it than pod scheduling, because that just has a funky, gimmicky a connotation to it. I mean, if they came up with like revised scheduling or three permanent scheduling or just something that sounds more permanent and more solid than pod scheduling. That sounds like you're going to take the schedule and put it in your washing machine to do your clothes. I think it would be a great idea. And I agree. Those are the three teams I would think of because, you'd say, well, what about Florida and Tennessee and LSU and all them? We'd still play them all the time. That's the other great thing about that system is that you have three teams you play every single year, just like we play Alabama and Georgia now. But the thing of it is, you'd play Florida way more often. You'd play Tennessee way more often. You wouldn't go 12 years between going to Missouri or to Vanderbilt or to Florida or whatever. It would be awesome. So we definitely, how can they not look at this, or how could they look at this and not say this is what we need to do?
I think because people are scared of change if I'm a TV executive, I would push the SEC to do this. CBS should push the SEC do this because.
And that's that's how you get it done too, is when the money starts talking.
Mm-hmm. When the SEC says, man, we'd much rather have this than, the same, Vanderbilt Missouri game every year or whatever. Like we could be having some of these rivalry games more often, more of these fun interdivision matchups.
Heck yeah. Anything that lets us play Florida and Tennessee more often It's one of my great disappointments in football that we used to play under in the Steve Spurrier era. We played Florida at least once, if not twice, every year. And in the crap Florida era after Urban Meyer, we've played them once.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair.
We played Florida every year for, 50 years in a row until 1992.
Yeah. And then we played them, on and off a lot more often until 2007, through 2007.
Yep.
So it's been one time since then. Well, anyway, a few other things here, and then we'll get to our little bit about basketball and our listener questions and all that. I sat down this week with Cole Kubelik, former Auburn center, and he was really an interesting person I really wanted to get on for the We Believed miniseries, because he played a couple of years for Terry Bowden and a couple of years for Tommy Tuberville. So he has a really good perspective on both of those coaches and both of those eras and some really important games during that time. And so I sat down with him for about 45 minutes, and I got material that I'm going to use in episode 5, which is the Terry Bowden era on We Believed. And I got material I'm going to use on both of the Tommy Bowden episodes. I mean, Tommy Bowden, the Tommy Tuberville. I've had Bowden on the head. I've been working on that all week. I got material I'm going to use on both of the Tommy Tuberville episodes, which will come up in a couple of months after, in the next couple of months after that. By the way, if you've been listening to We Believed, if you're a patron via Patreon, you'll get the fifth episode, the Terry Bowden episode, in about a week. If you are listening for it just through the regular AU Wishbone, like the Podbean or iTunes feeds, you will get episode 4. Within the next week or two. Patrons have been able to listen to episode 4, which has the first time ever game and the end of the Pat Dye era. They've been able to listen to that for about a month or a month and a half now, and I've gotten some good feedback, but I'm looking forward to letting everybody else hear it finally. So episode 4 is coming to the regular feeds. Episode 5 is coming to patrons on Patreon. But also I got some audio of Cole talking about the current team, and I might end up using it months and months from now when we get to the end of the series, but I wanted to go ahead and let our regular listeners hear some of it now. So I appreciate Cole coming on very much and mentioning it apparently on his radio show on WJOX. He's also on the SEC Network, of course, after playing center for Auburn back in the end of the 90s, early 2000s. And so here's a little bit about, this is like the last bit of my conversation with him that I thought you, John, and the audience might like to hear. So I'm going to fire that up. What do you think is the future of Auburn football? Where does the program need to go? What do they need to do that they're not doing now if you were the athletic director or something like that? Any thoughts along those lines?
I think they need to find a way to – they need to find their identity on both sides of the ball first and foremost. I think they have it defensively. And I think Gus calling plays could be good for them to find it offensively. I think that's a very real possibility. The development of players has to change, has to get better, has to improve. There seems to be too many guys over the last 4 or 5 years that come in as A and leave as somewhere in between A and B as opposed to X, Y, or Z as far as player development is concerned. And if I were to give you one word that has to happen in the future for Auburn football to continue to be great, it would be consistency. Yeah. And I think there, and I don't know how to tell Alan Green how to do that. I don't know how to tell Gus Malzahn how to do that. If they sat me down and said, we're going to pay you $1 million a year, come in and fix Auburn football. And I'd say the first thing we got to do is be more consistent. Well, how do we do that? Well, I'd need a lot of people helping me find the answer to that, because I'm not smart enough to figure it out on my own. But consistency in effort, consistency in execution, consistency in game planning, consistency in development of players. And I'm not saying all those things are inconsistent all the time, because they're not. But I know that they need to be consistent more often. And if that happens, then I think there are some good years in the near future for Auburn football. I mean, you got a recruiting class with a couple guys who I think can be really good football players coming in. I think they got a stud tailback, a stud quarterback coming in, and you got a great defensive line returning this year. A couple guys in the secondary that are going to help. You got five returning starters on the offensive line, and even though those guys underperformed last year, there's a chance for them to take a big step. And so you look at kind of what's there and what's coming in, and you feel like, okay, if things do become more consistent and they can find a way to erase some of the mistakes and a couple of more guys can develop maybe at a faster rate than the previous guys have, they could be pretty good the next few years. But the one thing that I would say is finding a way top to bottom for players, coaches, performance, game plan, recruiting, development, all to become a little bit more consistent, I think would be what will determine just how good Auburn football can and will be the next 6 to 8 years.
Okay, so that's just a little taste of some of the conversation with Cole. What did you think about that? I mean, he's certainly right about consistency.
It was great. Yeah. Really good stuff. I mean, consistency is huge, and we talked about this. When you have the talent and the coaching ability and the ability to beat great teams, and you turn around and lose games to lesser teams or to teams that you feel like you should have beaten if you played as well as you did. Mm-hmm. In the other game, that's inconsistency. And that's what we want to see is a more consistent finished product. And I thought what he said about player development was really important. I mean, we have a lot of talented guys come in the door at Auburn football, and some guys get better, but it is not across the board, and it is not as many as it should be. So I think we need to see more of that, more guys become not just, better, they're in better shape and they're, stronger or whatever, their bodies mature, but that they over time become much better football players. And they're not the same, football player they were when they walked in the door. So I think that's a big thing.
Yeah. And I worry particularly about like our wide receivers in that regard. I've gotten the sense that they don't. I worry that impacted the recruitment of Pickens, that they tend to like leave or feel like they're not getting properly used. You saw even Slayton had sort of negative things to say at the combine, that he didn't think he got to really play anywhere close to his potential in his time at Auburn. And that's disappointing. But I understand. I mean, when you're a receiver, though, you kind of have to get what you can get. You have a lot of competition for the ball, certainly, but I think that three name had the same complaint, and I worry that I don't even think it's Cody's fault necessarily so much as our offense has never been a receiver friendly offense. Our offense is a running back friendly offense, and so I don't know, but that's always kind of worried me that. I've been surprised we've gotten the receivers that we have, given the way our offense works and how they've not gotten drafted and not seem to get developed very much. But we'll see. So, again, I wanted to point out, as I had mentioned earlier, that John and I do other shows. And on the White Rocket Entertainment Network, which is the overall network this show is on, you can also go on iTunes or on Podbean and just search for White Rocket Podcast, and you can hear us talk about Game of Thrones coming up now. We're about to get into our weekly dissection of everything happening on that show when it comes back. We just posted our season preview for the final season. You might enjoy. And, of course, we also have the James Bond feed on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Just go to secretpodcast.podbean.com or you can go on iTunes under Secret Podcast. And we do all these other things. In fact, Saturday we're doing a round table on Buckaroo Banzai of all things. That'll be a lot of fun. I'm like five people want to talk about that. So what have we got going on in Auburn news this week, John, that we haven't already mentioned?
A few minor things. We talked about our defensive back coach leaving to go to Purdue.
Yeah.
And so Wesley McGriff has returned to Auburn to take his place.
Yep.
He had left to become the defensive coordinator at Ole Miss. And
Did not go well.
He lost that job, but he was a perfectly fine cornerback coach, defensive back coach at Auburn before. He's a good position coach. He's a good recruiter. He was well-liked by the players and the staff at Auburn. And I think, again, another guy who's a strong recruiter is always a plus.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I think we felt like he, you know, we the big turnaround of defensive backs at Auburn was, you know, the period of time that Muschamp was here. Mm-hmm. And Tavarius Robinson. And I think the way we recruited defensive backs, the way they were coached, the way they played really changed during that time period and kind of came to fruition after that. Mm-hmm. And I think McGriff continued that. So I'm happy.
That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's also been some more, you know, discussion. We talked in a recent episode about a football only building. There's been kind of more conversation about that, how it needs to happen, how it's not a Gus thing. It's an Auburn football and future of Auburn football thing. And
yeah, the thought that people were going to punish Gus and punish the university for retaining Gus by not giving money for that is that's like saying I don't like the way my doctor acts when he comes to visit me, so I'm going to refuse my cancer medication. I mean, it's a long-term thing. It's not you can cut off your nose to spite your face, but at the end of the day, you cut off your nose. You know, I mean, that we've got to keep up with the Joneses, the Alabamas and the LSUs and the Georgias and all. And it's not punishing Gus to not build Auburn something. You want to punish Gus? I mean, there are other ways than hurting the actual university.
It's not punishing Gus, or maybe it is, but I think it's like we think it'll work. Therefore, we don't want it to be built under Gus because then it might help him succeed. Maybe it's that.
That's even more asinine. I hadn't even thought of it that way.
I agree.
Oh, my goodness. We don't want to do anything that would prove our prejudging of him wrong.
Yes. Oh. Which again, with this scenario involves Auburn winning more games.
Yeah. Good grief. But see, they're going to say in the long run, starving the immediate problem to make it go away would win more games in the future. But see, we've talked before about this, that there's long-term thinking that's healthy, and then there's people that are just always thinking about tomorrow and never about now. You know, it's like, oh, Terry went 20-0. Well, we got to fire him because I want somebody even better. Oh, well, you know, Tuberville didn't win it all in 2003. We got to fire him. We want somebody better. You know, it's always, you know, oh, Chizik didn't win the Florida State game. So in 2014, we're talking about firing him. I mean, Gus, there's always people, no matter how things are going now, that it, like, you know, they would say, oh, we won 5 national championships in a row, but we didn't win them by enough points. So let's hurt Auburn. So we'll fire this guy and bring in a coach that'll win us 5 more by a bigger margin. You know what I'm saying? I mean, again, I understand long-term thinking, but there's long-term thinking that's just stupid. It's ignoring the good things now because tomorrow always looks better. It's the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence idea. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, that's what I was thinking when you were saying is the grass is always greener and people are always going to look over there and go, I'd rather have that and not appreciate what they have.
He won us 5 SEC championships. Well, I want somebody to win us 6. You know, I mean, it's always just, you know, enjoy what you got and work to be better, but don't cut off your nose to spite your face. I mean, that's what I'm saying is, you know, so.
And this, it's a great segue into our next topic, which is the current Auburn basketball team.
Oh, boy. I don't know what to think about the basketball team because there was a graphic they did during the Mississippi State game, which was a roller coaster car with Pearl in it. And I'm like, yeah, that's been Auburn. It's funny, during the 80s and 90s, that was Auburn basketball all the time, was that roller coaster. And then for about 15 years, it was nothing but down at the bottom. At least now we're back on the roller coaster again and not stalled out on the side of the track. So that's an improvement, you know. So, but what do you think about Auburn basketball right now?
I think it's a really good season, and I think the only thing that is messing it up is preseason expectations.
Yeah,
and I think Auburn fans need to let those go right now and enjoy every minute with this team.
You make a good point.
And I think if, again, before this weekend, Auburn had only had 10 seasons with 20 wins or more. We'd only done it three times since 2000, okay? So, and winning 20 games is a big deal. And we need to appreciate it and this team. And, yeah, we got our rear end kicked at Kentucky, but the roads in and out of Lexington are littered with the bones of great basketball teams that got destroyed up there.
Yeah.
And we never play good up there. And I feel bad that I didn't say this before or after that game, but my level of depression about that game was like 0.0.
I didn't get to watch it. And when I heard the score, I just deleted it and didn't even turn it on.
Yeah, but you weren't like, oh my gosh, we got killed by a really good Kentucky team.
No, I'm just saying it rolled right off my back and I kept going because I figured we were going to lose. I didn't think we were going to lose that badly, but I wasn't shocked. And I just said, nah.
I'm sure there's probably another example, but there may not be. I don't know if there's another Auburn team in any sport that struggles at another facility the way Auburn basketball struggles at Rupp Arena.
Yeah.
When they're really good up there, it's really hard to win there. So, again, we beat a really good Mississippi State team this weekend. Team played really well. The crowds in Auburn, again, have been great. And I said this earlier, I think one of the problems is the home field advantage, the home court advantage for Auburn is amazing. Mm-hmm. It is really one of the best in the country, not just the SEC.
It really is.
And I think we play at it. Increases our effectiveness to such a level that we go on the road, people are like, man, we are not the same team. Mm. And I think some of it has to do with how good the crowd is and how good that arena is for this team.
Look at the Mississippi State game. We played them at more or less full strength a month or two ago and got killed in Starkville. They just shut us down completely. We played them with arguably a weaker team this past Wednesday or Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. We played them with an arguably weaker team on Saturday, and we're up 19 toward the end.
Yep.
Well, we almost blew it. But, well, I mean.
But I think it's a, yeah.
I'm just going to, I think you're right about letting the preseason expectations go. We do spend an awful lot of time on this show year to year, not making excuses, I don't think, but trying to dissect and autopsy what went wrong or what's going wrong, and usually with football, unfortunately. But I mean, is it, in hindsight, is it that losing Mustafa Heron hurt us because he was never like the number one guy at anything, but he was like 1A at everything, you know, and he was a guy you could turn to when other thing. If Bryce was off, and Bryce is off as much as he's on, you know, if Jared's turning the ball over and not hitting his eight mile long three pointers, and you know, if everything else is going wrong, Heron was kind of like the guy that could at least get you a layup or get you a short 2-point shot. And I feel like when we had him, it wasn't as visible how important he was.
Mm-hmm.
But without him there, I don't think that, you know, you kind of had to hope that Purifoy would step in and take his place, and he hasn't. And no. Chuma would step in and take his place between the two of them. And Chuma's been really good, but he's only now, I think, even getting close to the level he could play at. So I feel like Heron gone, and then McLemore never. I mean, he's good, but he's not like he was, you know, early last season. And so it really has
and
come.
And then Wiley out again.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I forgot about that one. Yeah, Wiley's been on and off, and he's never really been on, even when he's been on the court. So it really has kind of come down to a game of Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, and hope that Chuma gets something going or one of the other guys will score 8 or 10 points. And you just can't count on those two guards to light it up every single game. They need inside help.
Well, in the last 2 weeks, Chuma has become that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's those three guys. And the problem is we have to keep two of those guys on the court all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we cannot go with a lineup that only has like one of those guys and four other guys, because then it's the stats are ugly.
Yes.
Guess when the big comeback happened last weekend? Only one of those guys was on the court.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So, and Chuma has really blossomed in the last few weeks into the player that we could see it coming, and his confidence is growing. Mm-hmm. And his abilities and his ability to kind of impose his will in the game, get his shot when he wants to against anybody. And I think he's become that third scorer that we needed. That's really taken some pressure off the guards. And then we've had other guys step up for periods,
right?
But not consistently. I mean, Dunbar did a little bit and then it went away. And, so I think, you know, again, I said this before and I'm saying it again, this team is still really good. They've won 20 games. I think there's still a chance down the stretch here for us to get a double bye in the SEC tournament. We're still in a position, you know, we're tied right now with the other couple other teams for that fourth spot. We could get the double bye in the SEC tournament. That'd be gigantic.
It would be huge.
And I think this team has the kind of talent and ability and coaching that we could go on a run in the SEC tournament or the NCAA tournament and win a couple of games and have a really fun ride. They 100% could do that.
Looking at the four teams, look at the teams that we're in competition with for that spot, though. Clearly, Florida has the hardest road because they got to play like LSU and Kentucky, so that ain't happening.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina's got the easiest. I don't remember who it is. They got like Georgia and Vanderbilt or something. But I think we've got like the second easiest road. So if South Carolina is probably going to get that spot, I'm going to go ahead and predict. But if they don't, I think we have a good chance. But Tennessee's tough though. Alabama. I mean, you can't take that for granted.
No. But that Tennessee game is going to be tough. They beat the crud out of Kentucky in Knoxville the other night. So
yeah, it's going to be tough. All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out. I just don't want to end the season with a loss to Alabama, the SEC season again like that.
I get it, but I want to tell people, like, enjoy this team, appreciate it. You know, this is a rarity for Auburn basketball, and we need to enjoy these players because, you know, they're going to be going, and we're going to be like, man, we can't. You know, we have such a hard time handling the ball. We miss Jared Harper so much. And so, I think the day is coming and we need to enjoy it while we can.
I love this team. It just hurts me physically and emotionally when they lose just because they're just so lovable, and every one of them. So, all right. I think we're going to push the little blue button here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Someday I'll have to update Mira doing that, but I still like 5-year-old Mira there or whatever she was. So what do we got? I know we don't have many, but...
That's on me. I failed to ask in time. So first one is from Jared Albert.
Yes, Jared.
Who says, give me the most amusing thing you witnessed in Jordan Hare Stadium that wasn't a play on the field.
Oh. I should have put more thought into this.
Well, I mean, one of the things is the goalpost. When to tear the goalpost down one time, and the students carried it up to the edge, and they said, "Please don't throw it over."
97. Yeah, yes. 97. Which is, I'm going to be editing that probably tomorrow for We Believed. Yeah, my dad. I didn't hear that, but my dad told me later. My dad said that. Carl Stevens goes to the students carrying. Yeah, you know how he does if I had a cup, I could do it. To the students carrying the goalpost up the stands, please do not throw it over the top. You could kill somebody. My dad
so they
thought
had
that
torn
was
the goal. What game was that? 97.
That Iron Bowl. Remember?
That's right.
And they fumbled and we kicked the field goal. Yeah.
That's right. So they carried the goalpost up. They tore it down and carried it up the stands and were literally going to throw it over the edge down onto the street.
It's like, you will kill somebody. Daddy just thought that was hilarious that he actually said, you're going to kill somebody. That was the game that put us in the SEC championship game for the first time since we didn't get to go in 93 because of probation. So And I'll forever be angry that we should have been in the SEC championship game more times than we actually have been there, by the way. I guess the one that comes to my mind the quickest, we've talked about this before, was when they paged Otis Mounds out of the stands to go dress out because he was being redshirted and he was in his shorts and T-shirt in the stands. And the player ahead of him got injured. And they actually called him out of the stands. They said, "Will Otis Mounds please report to the dressing room?" He had to jump up and like Batman run to the Batcave, you know, to come out in his uniform. So that was pretty funny, too. If I think of another one.
Well, I see. Have we seen like genuine mascot fights, that kind of thing? We saw one of our friends almost get into it with the Florida coaches.
Some of them got zip tied on the ground by there because they were yelling and hollering back and forth with Gary Darnell in the 89 Florida game. Yeah, we talked about that on We Believed on the episode 4 that's up. Yeah, if you haven't heard episode 4 yet, when it's out in the next week or two, you get to hear us talk about that. That's pretty funny. There have been some other good stuff.
I was not there, but I've seen the video of us turning the sprinklers and the hoses on the Georgia fans, and that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I wasn't at that one either. The barn burning down outside the stadium during the LSU game in 96 was crazy because somebody parked their van over a charcoal grill. That was insane. I was there. I was in the stadium, and I could smell the smoke and see the fire roaring over the top of the spiral stairway, the walkway. That was crazy.
Some of the stories about the West Virginia game in the rain.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think if I ever remember anything like totally divorced from like football or whatever, like just people being weird or anything. I really haven't. All the years I was there, everybody was pretty, pretty well behaved. I don't remember off the top of my head other, you know, it's always been stuff that's involved the football game itself to one degree or another, it seems like. So, what else we got?
We need listeners to chime in on this and let us know if they have some story that we're missing that they thought was really amusing.
Sure there's some.
Especially ones that did not involve football.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question comes from Mr. Knoll, who says, from JNoll4 on Twitter, who says, "What new players, other than quarterback, will have the biggest breakout this year? It could be an incoming freshman or a current player who hasn't played a big role yet."
Well, the one that's going to have the opportunity are the two running backs. And any redshirt running backs we might have, which I don't think we do now. I think they're gone. But we desperately need, if you're a running back and you can step in and grind out some tough yards between the tackles, and your name is not Booby, you've got, because he's already there, but he needs help. You know, you don't want to grind him to the dust before the year's over. So if one of those two new running backs can step up and be Rudy Johnson this year or something approaching that, you know, doesn't that seem like a prime opportunity?
It does. I'm going to give you a couple of other players I think will step up. I think we have a couple of defensive linemen that have been, you know, kind of sitting behind other people, and they're going to, you know, get to play more this year. I think as a signee, Owen Papo is an absolute stud at linebacker.
Yes.
And I think he's going to get on the field and make plays. Running around, you know, is a very, very fast freshman linebacker who can make stuff happen. And I think as a freshman receiver, I don't think this guy's going to play this year, but I think in years to come, Javaris Johnson is the Ryan Davis clone.
Ooh.
He's a little bitty, shifty guy. He's literally like, give me one second. I think I have his measurements right here. He's a little bitty, shifty guy. He's 5'8", 163 walking
the
door, okay? So he's literally like Ryan Davis's size as a freshman. He'll put on a little bit of weight, but him on the little screen passes, he's very tough in space to cover and to bring down. And so he's the little guy and the little flare passes, the little screen passes, the little you know, the short dump off routes. You know, I think we'll have Will Hastings there back this year to do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think down the road, this is the guy to step into that role and be a fun player that everybody will enjoy.
And that's a good point, by the way. We'll have Will Hastings back, and we should have Stove back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a couple of weapons. That's like we always say, a couple of bullets in our gun that we didn't have last year. So that'll be very nice for whoever our new quarterback is going to be. They'll have a couple of extra weapons that Stidham didn't have really very effectively last year. Isn't there a redshirt? Isn't there a receiver that we redshirted that has a chance to be really good too? It seems like we ended up redshirting one of our receivers from 2 years ago, or a year ago.
We did.
I can't remember who it is because Seth Williams played, and you know also.
Okay. I see your Schwartz is Matthew big Hill. As mine.
Yeah, Matthew Hill, that's the one. Yeah, I was just doing the little Schwartz thing. I don't know if you heard. But, yeah, so Schwartz and Williams played. But, yeah, Hill is the one.
I think he's probably the guy that you're thinking about that could come in and make a difference next
year. Yes, he is.
All right, that's it for listener questions.
Okay, let's see. We got to take our trip around the SEC real quick. But first, I've been talking about our patrons. And for as little as $1 a month, you can join our family, the AU Wishbone family, as I always say, and help keep these shows on the air. Most of the shows we do are this one, the AU Wishbone, but we also do our Game of Thrones show on the White Rocket show. We do our James Bond shows, where Alan Porter and I, he's a British Bond expert. We go through every movie. We're like halfway through now. We do a Formula One show. We talk pop culture, the Marvel movies and everything. We have a lot of stuff going on our network of our various shows, and either on the White Rocket Entertainment Network, on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, or here on the AU Wishbone. And if you want to be a part of any of those, you get all kinds of bonuses. You get to hear things like We Believed a month or two early every month, and you get to get – I gave away free books a while back. And we have discounts and all sorts of cool things. We even have a Formula One fantasy league that's already gearing up. That's going to be a lot of fun. So here are the folks who are currently. All you have to do, by the way, to join that group is just go to www.auwishbone.com. www.auwishbone.com and click on the Become a Patron link. Here are our current patrons that are kicking butt and keeping this show going. Brennan O'Dwyer, of course, has done big things for us, and Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, and Phil Amthor. We have Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then, of course, there's Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell. And then I'm almost done, John. I'm in the home stretch. Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Commode, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brett Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and of course our one-time and anonymous donors. And the reason that I read all those names every single show is because these folks go above and beyond to help keep us on the air. They are literally part of this show, and so they literally will be thanked on this show. So go to www.auwishbone.com if you want to join the family. And I guess our last thing we haven't done.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Well, what else is going on around the SEC, if anything? This may be a very short segment.
Georgia's unhappy, whining about the schedule changes. I didn't mention earlier when in the Auburn and the SEC, there were some minor shuffling of coaching assignments.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, our linebackers coach is now co-defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, talk about a swift ascension. And so he was like a graduate assistant and then became linebacker coach, and now he's co-defensive coordinator. Do you suppose somebody else was making motions toward hiring him away and we had to, like, bump his pay up and give him another title or something? Or how do you think that came about?
Potentially. I mean, I'm sure he's probably a hot commodity.
He should be.
Other teams potentially were ready to throw big money at him and you know, maybe offer him defensive coordinator title. So, because they could definitely get him with that. So I think it's we want to keep him. He's a great young coach.
Yeah. I'm glad we are too. What do you think about our coaching staff right now? I feel like it's pretty solid. I mean, we all wish, and they did a little bit to kind of help with the offensive line, right? They moved some. It seems like we hired an extra advisor or consultant for the offensive line, something like that.
We have, Kendall Simmons.
Yeah.
Who's a,
great Auburn offensive lineman.
A great Auburn offensive lineman, a former Pro Bowl NFL player who's on campus and who's going to be helping out with the offensive line as an analyst. And then we hired another analyst who was a former offensive line coach, I think when Gus was at Tulsa. This guy was a coach there, maybe this guy was at Tulsa now, but he had worked with Gus back then and knew the system. And so he's like the third guy who will be helping Grimes and Kendall Simmons with the offensive line. So I think it's a good thing. We got a lot of guys, and the pressure is on that area, not just to get the starting five and get them to play well, but to develop the younger players. The guys we just signed and the guys that are already on campus, they need to develop those guys so that they can, step in and play, because we're not going to make it through this season with, five guys and nobody getting banged up. Somebody's going to have to step on the field and play. So who's that going to be? And then who's going to be ready to step up and play SEC football a year from now?
Am I correct in thinking that the title analyst is a fairly meaningless title that you use to hire somebody that hasn't really been an assistant coach but has promise, or somebody that's on their way down from a crash like a Sarkisian or something, and you give them that job so that you can put them on the payroll, keep them around, and like have them on probation, and then if they do a good job, you move them to an on-the-field type of actual assistant title? That's the impression I get from it.
That's because that's the way other teams like Alabama use it. It doesn't have to be used that way.
Okay.
The idea of analyst is to have, additional people like potentially with coaching experience who can help out the assistant coaches by doing stuff like breaking down the practice tape and grading who did well in which drill and that kind of stuff, or helping to scout future opponents or self-scout our team and give that information to the position coaches and enable them to have more time with the players and more time recruiting or wherever else. And so it's really just kind of a more horsepower to do business kind of thing. The difference is between an analyst and a coach is you can only have so many on the field coaches.
Right.
The NCAA limits that. Otherwise, Alabama would have a 60-person coaching staff.
So yeah, they would.
You could only have so many on the field coaches and only so many people recruiting. That's the rule. And so you have these people who aren't, those things, and they're not graduate assistants, and you pay them decently, and they do all this work. And so Alabama's used it as kind of the rehab center for wayward coaches, but it also could be used for up-and-coming people who have good ideas, but they aren't ready, to be in the on-the-field role.
Exactly. Well, am I wrong to think that Simmons might be grooming – they might be grooming him to be our future offensive line coach?
It could, and it could be him trying to decide if he wants to do that. I mean, the guy's had a good NFL career. I think he's made a good bit of money. So he has to decide, does he want the grind of being on the road recruiting, or does he just want to coach football? Then he can, in his current role, he can help out, with spring practice and that kind of stuff. But he's not out. He doesn't have to go on the road, and he's not the position coach.
Yeah. That's the impression I got. So, okay. Well, I guess that's all we really have for this week, but I'm glad we got to do a good solid hour of kind of catching up on things, and it's nice to have basketball that's positive mostly to talk about. So we've got who coming up? We play Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and then we've got Tennessee to close out in Auburn, right?
That's it, and then the SEC tournament after that.
Woo! All right. Well, and then after that, and in terms of our racing show, it's less than a week now until IndyCar starts, and then less than 2 weeks till Formula One starts. So if you folks out there want to join the Patreon and be part of the Formula One League, come on aboard now, and you can go ahead and pick you out. We're picking out three teams instead of just one, so you got lots of opportunities. It's going to be a lot of fun, and the season starts in less than 2 weeks. So come on aboard, and it'll be a lot of fun. All right, any last thoughts?
You said that. It made me think we are definitely going to do an NCAA pool for patrons. So.
Yes, the NCAA tournament. That's right. So that'll be going on for the patrons too. Look, that's always one of our annual things that we get to do together. So that'll be fun. All right, well, that's it for this week.
War Eagle, man. I messed you up.
Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle. So what becomes of?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.